Well, welcome back to HealthLink On Air, brought to you each week by University Hospital, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. And this is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate. Well, you know, there are hundreds of children in the Central New York region with some form of cancer. Dozens of new children are diagnosed each year here in this area. They're children of all ages, and of course, they need all kinds of treatment. Sometimes it takes months, sometimes it takes years. Do you ever wonder what these children do about school? Well, we did. We wondered, for those children who have long-term treatment or they need to stay away from their classroom for health purposes, how do they keep up with school? Well, in the studio with me this morning is Nan Songer. She's director of the Educational Connections Program for the Center for Children's Cancer and Blood Disorders at University Hospital. Good morning, Nan.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for coming by. This really is a good question. What do these children do about school?
We have a variety of ways of addressing school issues with children. When children are initially diagnosed, they are quite sick, so we give them a period of time when they're just receiving treatment. But within the first few weeks, we are talking about school alternatives. We are looking at our school-based hospital tutor as one alternative for education. We connect with school districts immediately and let them know the status clinically of the child, and we ask them to begin the process of planning for flexible tutoring arrangements that might involve a combination of school attendance and home-based tutoring, full home-based tutoring, and in some instances we have children who also would receive multiple tutors in their home based on their age, and how many different subject matter courses that they're involved in.
I see. Okay. Well, first of all, how many kids are we talking about?
Typically, the kids that we're talking about may be somewhere in the vicinity of 80 children, 85 children who need to have real modifications of their curriculum in order to stay connected with school.
I see. 80 to 85. And over the course of a few years, do some of them, are they in the system for a long time? I mean, I know treatment can last for a long time.
Depending on the treatment and depending on the individual child's response to treatment, some children will be actually unable to attend school longer than others, even others with the same diagnosis.
Sure. And that would make sense. How old are these children?
Our kids actually, and you might be surprised to hear this, can run anywhere from children who are under a year old right up to kids who are attending college.
Oh my gosh.
And we would be addressing their educational issues based on potential cognitive problems, how they think, how they learn, as well as some of the motor skill problems or their ability to use speech and language effectively.
Really? Okay. Well, I can't imagine you're doing a lot with speech and language in the children who are under the age of a year, but let's talk really about those children who are in formal school and they need to keep up. One of the issues I would have to think would be children who are afraid of being held back. I know even for healthy children, they don't want to stay back a year or any period of time. Is that one of the goals you have, is to keep them in school?
Probably the underlying goal of all the work that we do in the Educational Connections Program is to give kids a very loud and strong message: we expect you to get better.
Okay.
And kids who are getting better belong in school. School is the work of childhood, and we think that it really is not only for the kids but their families too, our way of saying, you're not off the hook.
Yeah.
You know, we expect you to have, you know, high expectations for yourself. And it is a very fine line that we walk between getting really bogged down in some of the clinical and the sadness that surrounds a cancer diagnosis and the expectation that our kids will be survivors and that we want to put them in the best possible place for being contributors in their world.
Well, you know, I love that word survivors, because it seems to me that attitude is so much of any illness, getting beyond any illness. By telling them that you have expectations for them beyond their disease, that has to be huge.
And it's the pleasure in the work that I do. Sometimes kids want to have the Disneyland environment for a while. They're sick and everybody's doing for them. And we do have some children who learn helplessness, and they begin to look to others to do for them all the time. I think by staying actively involved with school, we give them a very firm message that this is about you and your efforts. And so we keep them connected to school, not only for the content of school and the curriculum of school, but for the social emotional connections that they have with the other classmates that they have in their their school buildings.
Absolutely. That part of it has got to be huge. Well, let's break it down a little bit. Let's talk about some of the younger children, say elementary ages. What kinds of services do you provide for them?
For elementary age kids, if they're in the hospital at the time, we actually have an agreement with the Onondaga County, Cortland County, Madison County, BOCES, and we have a hospital-based tutor who actually will collect work from the children's schools, and she will meet with them bedside as long as it's appropriate to do so based on the child's age and how they're feeling on that given day. So she is their consistent educator while they're here in the hospital. When they go home, by state law, school districts are required to give them a minimum of 1 hour a day of home-based tutoring by someone who understands the curriculum that child's age would dictate.
And what about, do any of them go to school part-time? Maybe they have treatment part-time and they're in the classroom part-time?
They sure do. I have to say, our group of physicians is very aggressive about ensuring that kids are back to school ASAP.
Is anybody concerned about their, I mean, I believe they must have compromised immune systems from their treatments and so forth. Is anybody concerned they're going to pick up something when they're in the classroom?
We certainly monitor them clinically and for health reasons. If they have really, really low counts, we might say, you know, maybe this isn't a really great time for you to go to school. But the majority of our kids are really encouraged to go to school, even if it's for part-time, and many of them have a flexible tutoring arrangement where they get home-based tutoring as well as school attendance, and so they don't get out of the habit of attending school, and that it helps them to recognize that they're still part of a school-based family.
Are they wearing masks, perhaps, to protect them from catching all those germs that are out there?
I suppose it has happened, but I'm not aware of it personally. We tend to go out to the schools or ask the school nurses to do a program that explains the child's diagnosis. We talk about who gets cancer and why. And for most pediatric cancers, we have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
We make sure kids understand cancer's not catchy.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about good hand washing, what to do if you have to sneeze. And so we show the kids the gifts they can give this child for helping them to maintain their health.
So you're talking about the classmates. You're working with their classmates. So it really becomes a learning environment for all of them, doesn't it?
It absolutely does.
That's fabulous. What about when the kids get a little bit older, get into the middle school or even high school years? Can you have one tutor that can teach them everything? I mean, does the math teacher also teach the history, teach the English? How does that happen?
I suppose in the middle school, we may have a couple of super tutors, we might say, who could deal with the range of subject matter that's important there.
Mm-hmm.
But as you know, by the time we get in middle school, most of the kids are moving classes. It becomes more difficult. State law does tell us that those children are eligible for 2 hours a day of home-based tutoring, and we've arranged for them as well to have that very flexible look at going to school as well as having tutoring. So it is a combination effort on our part. And as kids move into high school, obviously, the challenges are greater.
Oh, yes, I would think so. And what do they do? I mean, now they've got to prepare for college. They have got to get credits for the courses they're taking. How can you accommodate for something like that?
Well, certainly the state of New York has made high school an aggressive and rigorous curriculum for kids now, and kids have minimum expectations in order to graduate. One of the things we want to try not to have happen is for kids to fall behind and then become a child who has to repeat a grade. We know through research, once a kid repeats a grade, they begin to do less well academically, and often they'll leave school.
Yeah, it's got to be the social question as much as anything.
It is. It's social and academic.
But what about these kids that are out of school for a very long time? How can you accommodate for them?
We have a couple of ways that we work at accommodation. The most often used still is an accommodation where we ask a school district to provide multiple subject-specific tutors so a child stays on track with their academics. Excitingly, we have a new program that we think we're the first in the nation to use. It's called Staying Connected is Good Medicine. This program allows the child real-time interactive capacity to attend their class. It is a technology that's in a box, portable box. If they're in the hospital, they plug and play and they get their classroom on the screen. They can listen to their teacher. They can be part of a lab group. They have the capacity to move the camera. There is no access to the internet at large, and there is no way to keep this classroom on tape. So it is real-time interactive.
So it's as if they're sitting in the classroom,
absolutely,
watching the teacher. And can the teacher see the student?
Yes.
Oh, that's great. And the kid, the other students too?
The other students can see the student.
Fabulous.
And if a child feels on that particular day that they're feeling kind of crummy, mm-hmm, they have the capacity to turn themselves off and still see the kids.
Oh, shouldn't we all have that capability?
Yeah, bad hair day.
Yes. Very good. Well, tell me then, is this something that's expanding? You said it's new. You think the university hospital?
We've done a pilot,
uh-huh,
and now we are actually implementing.
Fabulous.
And we have two children currently in the program. In rural schools, mm-hmm, which we're very proud of, we use a group of people to help us make this happen. We use our telemedicine folks from upstate.
Mm-hmm.
We use our BOCES network, which is statewide in the education field, that help us implement and put this in place, as well as the family, the child himself, and the school district are all partners.
What a fabulous program. That's very exciting, Nan. Thank you so much for coming by and telling us about this. You're the director of the Educational Connections Program, the Center for Children's Cancer and Blood Disorders at University Hospital. I think this is a wonderful story of humanity and technology all rolled together. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, we do need to take a break now, but we'll be back shortly. This is University Hospital's HealthLink on Air on 570 WSYR.